All right, good evening, everyone. So we find ourselves this week in Parshas Vayechi. So, of course, there are many things in each of these parshas. I always say, I think I begin every year, each week, the same way, that it's often hard to decide what to focus on in the course of the parsha, being that there are so many riveting and so many meaningful events. And especially in Parshas Vayechi, which we know, of course, is much more than just simply the last parsha in Bereshis, but rather is also really the end of an entire period, I won't call it of Jewish history, but the end of a period of patriarchal history. Remember again that Sefer Bereshis is the book of the Avos, the book of the Avos and the Imos, the book of the patriarchs and matriarchs. It's not really the story of Klal Yisrael, it's not the story of the Jewish people, but rather again, it's the story ultimately of the evolution of the origins of the Jewish people. Sefer Shmos, of course, begins the actual story of the Jewish people, and so, therefore the events that occur in here are not just interesting from a storyline, but are interesting because they're the very foundation of our peoplehood. Our shir tonight is sponsored by Mitch and Janice Posner in commemoration of the Shloshim of Mitch's mother, which is tonight, Mrs. Lois Posner, Leah Bas Chaim, Zichron Levrach, and we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, her Nesham will have an Aliyah and the family in Nechama. So let's begin with number one. So Vayhi Achari HaDvorim Ha'ele, Vayomer LeYosef, Hine Avicha Chole, Vayikach Es Shnei Barnav Imo, Es Menashe Ve'es Ephraim. So what happens? Give you a little bit of context. So remember again, in the beginning of this week's parasha, Yosef gets word that his father is ill already. He was ill already at the beginning of the parasha. He summoned Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu gives him one simple request, which is, I'm not tikvarein b'mitzrayim. Don't bury me in Egypt, but rather when I die, transport my body. I want to be buried not just in Eretz Yisrael, but rather I want to be buried in Maras HaMachpelah in Hebron. So now Yosef gets word again that his father is ill. He takes his two sons with him, Menashe and Ephraim. Vayaged li Yaakov, vayomer hine bincha Yosef bo elecha, vayischazik yisra vayeshev al amita. Yaakov Inu gets word that his son Yosef is coming to visit him. So Yaakov Inu summons up his strength, sits on the edge of a bed, at the edge of the bed, in a show of deference and respect for his son. Vayomer Yaakov Yosef, kel shakai nira elai beluz be'eretz kanan vayivarech osim. So Yaakov Inu seems to give Yosef a little bit of a familial history lesson. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to me in Luz, in Eretz Canaan, and he blessed me. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4. Vayomer Elai, Hinini Mafrecha Virbisicha, Unisaticha Lakamim, Venasati Es Haaretz Azos Lazaracha Acharecha, Achuzas Olam. And God assured me that I was going to be part of the Abrahamic promise. I was going to have multiple offspring. The land of Israel was going to be given to me and to my offspring after me. Va'ata. And now Yaakov Avinu makes a stunning revelation to Yosef. V'ata shnei vanecha noladim lecha be'eretz Mitzrayim, ad bo'i elecha Mitzrayimo lihem. Now Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef, the two sons that you had prior to my arrival in Egypt, Menashe and Ephraim, they're mine. We'll see what that means in just a moment. Ephraim u'Menashe kiruvein v'shimon yihiyu li. What does it mean that Ephraim and Menashe are mine? It means that Ephraim and Menashe will be reckoned amongst the 12 tribes. That, remember again, what Yaakov effectively is giving Yosef is what we call in halacha pishnayim, a double portion. Remember again, although Reuven was the technical bechor, was the technical firstborn of Yaakov Avinu, Yosef was also a bechor, he was also a firstborn. Why was he a bechor? He was the bechor for Rachel Imenu. He was Rachel Imenu's firstborn son. So Yaakov Avinu now is almost certifying Yosef as the familial firstborn by giving Yosef a double portion. What's the portion of Yosef? That whereas Yosef by himself would have been a tribe, a shevet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says you are going to be two shvatim of Ephraim and Menashe. However, umolaretcha asher alarta acharehem, lecha yihiyu, ashem achehem yikaru ben achalasam. But Yosef, just understand, this is a unique allowance for the two sons you have now. Should you and Asnas have any additional children, those children will be subsumed under the tribal identities of Ephraim and Menashe. Okay, this is amazing in a number. Bless you. Amazing in a number of different ways. Of course, it's amazing given the fact that Yosef has been away from the family for over 2.5 decades. So you have to understand something. By Yaakov Avinu going ahead and saying to Yosef that your two sons Ephraim and Menashe are going to be like two shvatim, like two tribes, what is Yaakov Avinu essentially saying? What is he saying? Such a respectful audience. No one wants that. What Yaakov Avinu is essentially saying is, Yosef, I am certifying your spiritual standing. Because remember again, we didn't discuss this as much last week, but there's an incredible tension in last week's parasha. And it's not just the tension at the beginning of the parasha before the revelation of Yosef to his brothers. There's a tension of Yaakov Avinu. We spoke about a little bit the idea that Yaakov Avinu is seemingly hesitant to go down to Egypt. And the obvious question that the Mefarshim will ask is why? Why is, if you're Yaakov Avinu, you thought your son was torn apart by wild animals, and now you find out that what? Now you find out that he's alive. You would think that, what's your reaction? Run down to Egypt. But yet we see that Yaakov Avinu is hesitant, right? He has to see the wagons. He has to have the brothers tell him it's with Yosef. Even God has to appear to Yaakov Avinu and say, Yaakov, don't worry. Now, again, if God needs to tell Yaakov not to worry, what does that tell us, the reader? That he's worried. That he's worried. Now, what is Yaakov Avinu worried about? So most understand that Yaakov Avinu is worried about taking the family to Egypt. It just doesn't feel right. It just doesn't feel good. There's something about this. Yaakov Avinu has this foreboding feeling that taking the family down to Egypt paves the way for some negative chapters that are ahead. But there's another piece as well. What is Yaakov Avinu concerned about? He's concerned about who is the son that he's going to meet. 22 years ago, when I said goodbye to my son Yosef on that fateful day when he went to Shechem, I knew who he was. I knew who he was. He was a true Abrahamic heir. He was a true part of the Abrahamic dynasty. What's happened to him over 22 years? What has he become? Is he still the same Yosef? Which just, again, this is not a share in Parshas Vayigash. We are going to do Vayichi. But interestingly enough, remember, the Gemara points out that when Yaakov and Yosef meet, when they meet, so they embrace, and what does Yosef do? He cries. And what did Yaakov do? Right, so we know Yaakov didn't cry. So the Gemara, the Torah doesn't record that Yaakov cries. So the Gemara records that Yaakov Avinu was saying Kriyashma. Why was Yaakov Avinu saying Kriyashma? So the Maharal of Prague explains, because Yaakov Avinu was davening for his child. I'm so happy to see you, but who are you? What have you become over 22 years in Egypt? What kind of man have you? Remember, he left when he was 17 years old. 22 years later now, he's almost 39 years old. He's gone from a boy to an adult. What kind of adult have you become? Yaakov Avinu is nervous. That's why this is major. Because when Yaakov Avinu goes in and says to Yosef, your sons will be like my sons, they'll be Shvatim. What he's saying is, Yosef, you've accomplished a phenomenal spiritual feat. You have maintained fidelity to the Abrahamic tradition, even under the most spiritually adverse circumstances. By taking Yosef's sons as his own, Yaakov Avinu is saying to Yosef, I'm so proud that you are able to maintain a fidelity and an allegiance to our values, to our spiritual values, throughout these two and a half decades away. Fine, beautiful. Except it doesn't stop there. Take a look, still in number one, Pasuk Zayin, Pasuk 7. Va'ani, Yaakov Avinu then goes on and says the following, Va'ani, bivoi mi Padan, when I was coming back from Padan. Now, why was Yosef in Padan? What's in Padan? So Padan was Lavan. So when I was coming back from Lavan's house, I was entering into Eretz Yisrael. Meisa alai Rachel be'eretz Kinan baderech. Rachel, your mother, died. She died baderech. She died just in the middle of the road. Kivras ha'aretz, literally again, where there was still a stretch of land. Lavo Efrasa, which sounds like Yaakov Avinu is saying that she died in the middle of nowhere. She literally died in the middle of nowhere. It was a great distance to the next habitable place, which was Beis Lechem, which was Efrat. Ve'ek bereha sham badarech Efrat, and I buried her there on the road to Efrat, he Beis Lechem, on the way to Beis Lechem. And the an obvious question, which is, it's a not so obvious question, which is, right? Why is he saying this? Right? What does this have to do with anything? Right? Remember, again, let's follow the flow of the story. Yaakov Avinu just told Yosef that his own two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, are going to be reckoned like the tribes of Israel. Wonderful, beautiful, fantastic. Oh, and by the way, Yosef, you know, your mother died. We were in the middle of nowhere, and I had to bury her on the side of the road. That's how, you know, you ever see like the old paintings of Kever Rachel? So the old paintings of Kever Rachel, so what does it have? It has like a structure, and what's around it? Right, certainly not a big concrete wall or anything else. nothing. It was empty. Literally, Rachel Imenu was buried on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere. And Yaakov Avinu feels compelled to, now Yosef knows this. Yosef knows this. Yosef was a little boy when his mother died. He remembers, I guarantee you, he remembered the events surrounding her death and the events surrounding her burial. But yet Yaakov Avinu feels compelled to mention this tragic moment again. And the question we're going to try to explore tonight is why? Why did Yaakov feel compelled to bring this up now? So take a look. We're going to do a couple of different approaches this evening. Take a look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam writes, "Va'ani bevoi mipadan, ba'os ha'derech la'achar sheberchani ha'kadosh baruch hu, meisarecha ba'os ha'derech, ba'ot har b'derech ad ha'yishuv." So Rashbam says, Yaakov Avinu is telling, he's telling Yosef, listen, your mother died literally in the middle of nowhere. We were on the road, and remember again, Yaakov Avinu has a large family, a lot of livestock. He cannot move quickly. Your mother died in the middle of nowhere. Lochin kevartia baderech. Therefore, I had to bury her there in the middle of the road. Ki lo haya pinai lekovra eitzaleya b'ma'aras ha'machpelah. So the Rashbam, what the Rashbam is driving at over here is, what is Yaakov really saying? Wait, does Yaakov need to tell Yosef that his mother's buried in the middle of nowhere? Yosef was there. Does he need to tell him that he was far away from the yeshuv, from habitation? No. What is he really explaining to Yosef? Why isn't your mother buried in Maras HaMachpelah? Why is she not buried in the cave of the patriarchs? Why is she buried separate from everyone else? And so Yaakov explains, because she died in the middle of nowhere. Now, this is also compounded in the parashi that deals with the death of Rachel Imenu. The Ramban also points out that she died in childbirth. Because she died in childbirth, again, the Ramban is quite explicit, there was a tremendous loss of blood. Because of the tremendous loss of blood, it would have been a degradation for her body to be transported a long distance. Therefore, it was in the best interest of Kavod HaMeis, of just honor to the deceased, of honor to Rachel Imenu, to bury her right there. But look how the Rashbam says, V'shelo yafshi'uhu Yosef al imo, hutzrach lo markein. Yaakov Avinu feels that what? That Yosef may be harboring animosity towards his father about the way his father dealt with his mother's burial. Then again, remember, has Yosef ever said anything to Yaakov? No, but that's not such a good proof, because remember, they've been separated for 2.5 decades. Maybe they're not interested, but Yaakov Avinu is on his deathbed. You know, Yaakov Avinu, you know, the Gemara says that before Yaakov Avinu, the Gemara records that Yaakov Avinu was the first person to ever get sick before he died. The Gemara actually relates that the way people died before Yaakov Avinu, how did they die? The Gemara says, they sneezed. They sneezed. And the same way that the neshama entered into man through his nostrils, the neshama would leave man through his nostrils as well. Yaakov Avinu davened for sickness. Why did Yaakov Avinu daven for sickness? Because sickness prior to death is a blessing. Why? Because if a person knows that they're dying, and they know that, again, the end is near, they have the ability and opportunity to get their affairs in order. They have the ability, and we know if someone has lost a loved one, and the loved one dies suddenly, so the tragedy is compounded by the fact I never had a chance to say goodbye, and never had a chance to say those things that I wanted to say. Rachman al-Tan, if a person is ill, as tragic and as difficult as illness is, but it gives family an opportunity to say the things that need to be said, to make the apologies, to make the I love yous, to make the anything you need to say. So it almost says that Rashbam Yaakov Avinu was on his deathbed. And there are just certain things that have been weighing on his mind all of this time. Yosef, I have to imagine that you might be upset at me for burying your mother in the middle of nowhere. Perhaps you even perceive it. Because remember again, Yosef grows up in a family where there is incredible tension. And that's putting it mildly. Everybody focuses on the tension between Yosef and his brothers. But there's another underlying dynamic tension. And that is the tension between the wives. Right, remember the ongoing tension between Rachel and Leah. Yes, it was more acute at the beginning, and it certainly probably calmed down, but it was always there, and it was always there between their children. So Yaakov Avinu almost feels, Yosef's never said anything, but Yosef, I feel for some reason that perhaps you may harbor some animosity towards me about how I dealt with burying your mother. So let me set the record straight. I did what I had to do to preserve her kavod, to preserve her dignity. She died in the middle of nowhere. There was no real way to be able to transport her without compromising the dignity of her body, so I had to bury her in the middle of nowhere. That's an interesting approach, but the question still remains, so why does he mention it here? Right? Why is this said here? You want to tell me at the beginning of the parasha, tell me at the end of the parasha, why is it said here? So Rashi comes along and says, number three, Va'ani b'voy mipadan, va'af api, sha'ani matriach alecha lo licheni li cover be'eretz kinan, ve'lo kach asisi li'imecha, sharei samuch le'beis lecha mesa. So says Rashi, I'll tell you why it's coming up over here. Because what did Yaakov Avinu just ask Yosef to do a few psukim earlier? What did he ask him? Take me to bury me in Canaan. Now remember again, it's not a simple request. I mean, Yosef has the means to do so. But it's a journey, it's a big to-do. Remember again, it sounds strange to us, but they embalmed the body of Yaakov Avinu. They embalmed him. Why did they have to embalm his body? Because really it takes a little bit of time to travel from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael. It was hot. So they have to embalm. So it's not a simple thing. So Yaakov Avinu tries to be proactive. He says, Yosef, I know what you're thinking. He doesn't really know what Yosef's thinking, but he thinks he knows what Yosef's thinking. You're probably resentful of me because here I am asking you to transport my body from Egypt to Canaan, to Maaseh Machpelah, and what? And it's not just to Canaan. Because remember, again, he could have buried him in Be'er Sheva. That would have been a lot closer than taking him to Hebron. But he says, no, I want you to take him to Hebron. And you're probably thinking, what a chutzpah. You ask me to take your body to Hebron for burial, and you couldn't even transport my mother's body to Maaseh Machpelah for burial when she died much closer to the Ma'ara than what you're asking me to transport your body. So Yaakov Avinu therefore is proactive and says, I know that you're probably harboring animosity, so let me explain this to you. Skip down a little bit. Skip down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines down in number 3. Vekbera Hashem. And the truth is, not only did I not take her to Maaseh Machpelah, the truth is, I didn't even take her into Beis Lechem, into an inhabited area to bury her. I'll tell you why. I'm sure, Yosef, you're probably upset at me. You're probably upset. You probably have a tiny, you probably have a claim against me. But let me explain to you. I want you to understand that what I did with the instruction of God. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell me? Because when her offspring will be exiled by Nevuzaran, Nevuzaran was Rav HaTabachim, the Navi says. He was the chief butcher, the chief executioner of Nebuchadnezzar. When Nevuzaran led the Jewish captives out of Eretz Yisrael, so what happened? V'hayu ovrim derech sham. The path out from out to exile passed by what the place that became known as Kever Rachel, and Yotzesa Rachel al Kivra uBocha uMevakeshes ala Rachamim sheNeemar Kol Beraman Nishma. The voice is heard on high. Rachel Mevaka Abaneha. Rachel Imenu cries for her children. VaKadosh Baruch Hu Meshiva. God responds to Rachel Imenu. Yesh Schar Lefulaseich. There is reward for your actions. Nu'um Hashem v'shavu banim ligvulam. Your children will come home. So Yaakov Avinu now puts it all on the table. I asked you to bury me in Eretz Canaan. You're probably upset and resentful because I'm asking you to do something that I did not do for your mother. But let me explain to you why I didn't do it for your mother. It's not, you see, the Rashbam explains was because it was too far. Rashi says, no, it's not an issue of being too far. It's an issue of Alpi HaDibur. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me to bury your mother on the side of the road so that she would be an advocate for her children when they are being led out of exile. That's why I buried her where I buried her. So the question then becomes, again, remember, just keep all this in mind. The question then becomes, fine, so now I understand. According to Rashi, Yaakov Avinu is bringing this up now because it follows on the heels of his own personal request to Yosef to bury Yaakov in Canaan. There's only one problem, which is, so where should this ask, or where should this statement have been made? Earlier in the parasha. Remember again, I picked up for you in number one. Number one picks up after already Yaakov Avinu has made the request to be buried in Canaan. So you look in the Chumash, and the previous chapter, Yaakov Avinu asks explicitly, please bury me in Canaan. If that's the case, that Yaakov Avinu is now discussing Rachel Imenu, because he doesn't want Yosef to be upset, to feel like he's asking for something that he couldn't even do for his own wife, so why not put this statement a little bit earlier on? So watch this. Look at the Sfarno number 4. So the Sfarno writes, and this is quite amazing. The Sfarno writes, Va'ani, Shema Tomer, Kisha Amar Eilai, Akel Yisparach, V'nasaticha L'kalmim, Haysa Kavana Sha'olid Od Banim, Ella shegara machet. Let's skip down a little bit. Meisa alai Rachel, but oderach kivras aris lavo efrasa. I'm now in number four, four lines up from the bottom. Bederach kivo ef, beod kivras aris lavo efrasa. Listen to this. Tekif kishen asasi mi osa amakom. Shahaya dvar hakel yisparach elai. Beodi bederach. Terem higii lebeis lechem. Vek bereha sham bederach efrat. So again, I buried your mother in the middle of nowhere on the road to Efrat. Listen to what the Sfarno writes. V'kol kach gavra alai tirdasi ve'evelusi. I am so overcome by mourning and sadness and despair over the loss of your mother. Shelo atzarti koach lo licha lebeis kvaras beis lechem. Wow. Look what the Sfarno says. Sfarno says, not like the Rashbam, not that Beis Lechem was too far away, not like Rashi, that it was al pi adibur that Yaakov Inu had to bury her right here, but Yaakov Inu says to his son Yosef, I didn't have strength. I was so emotionally broken over the loss of your mother that I literally did not have the physical strength to take her to Beis Lechem to be buried. Listen to what he writes. Ve'in safek, ki me'az haya libi chalal bikirbi. And Yaakov Inu makes another stunning revelation to his son Yosef. From the day that your mother died, I was a shell of myself. I was never a whole person again afterwards. Velo shalat od bi yetzahara. And they never had a desire, an intimate desire, to be with anyone else. V'nechlasha ta'avasi. My desire was weakened. Velo nishar bi koach laholid banim. And I had no desire to have any more children. So my friends, you understand what's unfolding over here. If we put all of this together, there's something absolutely amazing that is unfolding. Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef, bury me in Egypt. And then right, and Yosef says, of course, right after that, what does he tell Yosef? What do we see, number one? What does he tell Yosef? The sons, Va'ata Shnei Banecha, the two sons you have, Ephraim and Asher, Lihem, they're going to be like tribes. And then what does Yaakov say? Your mother died in the middle of nowhere, and I didn't have the ability to go ahead and bury her in Maras HaMachpelah. If we bring this all together, what Yaakov Avinu is saying is to Yosef is like this. I'm asking you something that I know that I couldn't do for your own mother. Whether I couldn't do it because I didn't have the strength to do it, or I couldn't do it because it was too far, or I couldn't do it because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me not to do it. I didn't do it. She's buried in the middle of nowhere. But you have to understand the impact that the loss of your mother had on me. From the day that I lost your mother, I was not a complete person. I was not shalom. I was not whole. To the point that even the most natural desires that a person has, I did not have them if your mother was not in this world. And therefore what? I was supposed to have more children. There was supposed to be apparently more shvatim. But the death of your mother precluded that possibility. So I'll tell you what we're going to do. Ephraim u'Menashe, lihem. Ephraim and Menashe, those are the neshamos that should have come from me. Those are the neshamos that should have been born to me. But I couldn't because of the tragic circumstances of my life. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to look at your children as the children that I could have had my life circumstances been a little bit different. And therefore, I'm going to include them within the tribes of Israel. So it's amazing, startling revelation that Yaakov Avinu says to his son Yosef on his deathbed. For the first time, father and son discuss the traumatic. You know, what's interesting is, of course, the Torah is not a storybook. So we don't know how everything unfolded. But yet, you know, when you read of the death of Rachel Imenu, so the death of Rachel Imenu is discussed very matter-of-factly. Rachel Imenu is in childbirth. She's having a difficult childbirth. The midwives tell her, don't worry, al tiri, don't be afraid. It's a son. Rachel Imenu names him. She dies. Yaakov buries her. Never any discussion about with the family. Never discussion with little Yosef. Little Yosef is an orphan. And he's an orphan again. He's an orphan who's on the outs with his brothers also. Never any discussion. Now, does that mean that discussion between Yaakov and Yosef never occurred? No, it doesn't mean that at all. Like I said, Torah's not a storybook. But one thing we know for sure, which is, it is occurring now. As Yaakov Avinu is drawing his last breaths, he feels compelled to tell his son how much he loved his mother, how much he loved Rachel, how much her death shattered him, how much after her death he was no longer a whole person. How much he was so broken that he could not bring her to Ma'asa Machpelah, and he knows that that might make it painful for Yosef to have to bring his father to Ma'asa Machpelah when Yaakov couldn't do so for Rachel Imenu. And it also explains why Ephraim and Menashe are counted like the sons of Yaakov. These were the children, perhaps, that I should have had. These were the children that I could have had. But my life circumstances were such that the death of your mother, that tragedy, brought me to my knees, took the wind out of my sails, totally took away almost a certain koach of life within me. And so, Yosef, I have to live to a certain degree vicariously through you. Now, if you look at number 5, to finish out this first piece, Rechai Shmulevitz in the Sichos Musar says something very interesting. So he writes, and this is quite beautiful. He says in paragraph 8, V'yeshlis bonein bazeh. So I don't understand this. Let's contemplate this. B'shar sheba Yaakov l'fayis es Yosef b'no, shelo yihi ebelibo alav, lama hutzrach l'chol ha'ak damos halavu, v'lo v'chi lo daishi yomar, al pi hadibor haya. So what Rechai Shmulevitz is asking, if you look at Rashi, Rashi quotes the Medrash in its entirety. And Rashi says that Yaakov said to Yosef, I know that you're upset at me that I didn't bury your mother Ma'asa Machpelah. And Yaakov goes on to explain, it wasn't because it was too far, it wasn't because it was raining, it wasn't because it was snowing, atmospheric conditions were fine. And he explains all the reasons why perhaps one would have thought he didn't do it, dismisses all those reasons, and says, at the end of the day, the reason I did not go ahead and bury your mother Ma'asa Machpelah is because God instructed me to bury her by the side of the road, because this is the path her children will take when they're going to exile, and ultimately, again, she will be able to daven and advocate on their behalf. Asks Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, Yaakov, why don't you save a few, right? You only have a few words left. You only have a couple of minutes left of life. Save your words. Why don't you just tell Yosef, God instructed me. Why do you have to get into the whole explanation? I know you're maybe upset. I know you're this and that. Yosef, God told me to bury your mother in the middle of nowhere. Just say that. And what is Yosef going to say to that? What is Yosef going to respond to that? Okay, that's what God instructed you to do. That's what God instructed you to do. Why does Yaakov even have to go into a whole arichos? Why does he have to go into a whole discussion about, hey, it wasn't this and it wasn't that, and you might think this, you might just say, God instructed me to do it, and gamarnu. Look what he says. Hayala al adas, shadan yi Yosef choshed, shemachmas agisham nim Yaakov mi leolicho. Skip down a little bit to paragraph B. El ha'inyon kachu. Listen, Rechai Shmulevitz says something amazing. He says, "Emasai nitan lishmoa es devar Hashem." When does a person have the ability to go ahead and hear the word of God? Rak bishaa shemenarim es kol ha'afar hadavuk misaviv. Only when you shake out all of the dust, all of the ash that's settled around. Rak az miskale devar Hashem kafishu. Only then does the word of God become revealed. We'll find this in just one moment. Listen to what Chaim Shlavitz is saying. It's quite amazing. Chaim Shlavitz says that sometimes, when having a conversation with another, it is exceptionally important, before you state the facts, to be proactive in dispelling any misconceptions. That sometimes you have to think to yourself, what is this other individual thinking? How might they have understood these circumstances? And be proactive in trying to alleviate and trying to somehow address those misconceptions. Now, so therefore, Rechai Shmulevitz says that what Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef is, listen, yes, God told me to do it, but I want to address what I think you're probably feeling. I want to address what I think is probably going through your heart, what is going through your mind. Maybe you're upset. Maybe you're angry. Maybe you're resentful. Maybe you think that I couldn't do it because of this circumstance or that circumstance or this circumstance. So before I tell you, before I explain to you why I did what I did, let me address what it is that you're thinking. Let me address your feelings. Let me try to clear up any misconceptions. And then after he does all of that, he says, yes, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded me to do this. Now, this is exceptionally important because this dovetails very importantly to our shir last week. Because remember, again, we saw the very controversial idea about Rabbi Sacks, which some of you liked and some of you didn't like, right? Which because it's very controversial, which is, remember again, Yosef never contacts his father for 22 years, according to Rabbi Sacks. Why? Because remember, he thought that his father intentionally sent him to Shechem to be ambushed by his brothers and to be sold into slavery. He thought that his father was the architect of the plan to remove him from the family. Of course, he was horribly wrong. But remember again, how did that whole thing start? How did that whole misconception start? Because Yaakov Avinu reacted negatively towards the second dream of Yosef, and instead of talking it out, instead of discussing it, instead of Yaakov Avinu, the father, telling his son Yosef why he was upset at his son, he just got angry and everybody walked away. And that left Yosef in that my father doesn't want me in the family, and therefore he thought he connected all of the dots. My father told my brothers to go out to Shechem. My father then put me into, or sent me to the lions then. Brothers ambushed me, sold me, and for 22 years, a family is torn apart. Why? Why? Because of misconceptions, miscommunication, and misunderstanding. That's why a family was torn apart for over 2 decades. And Yaakov Avinu, to his credit, says, you know what? We're not going to repeat the same mistakes. Yosef, you know what? I don't know if you're angry or you're not angry, but you know, I'm going to err on the side of caution. And let's talk it out. Let's discuss it. If I were you, here's what I would be thinking. If I were you, here's what I would be upset about. If I were you, here's what would be on my mind. I don't know if you're thinking it or you're not thinking it, but you know what? Let's put everything on the table in an effort to go ahead and have a meaningful relationship. So again, lesson number one. And again, remember, when we learn these stories, we don't just learn them because they're interesting stories or because they're part of the Torah. These stories are here because they teach us important life lessons. So life lesson number one is that especially when dealing with family, so we always have to endeavor to try to avoid miscommunication and misunderstanding. And sometimes what that means is engaging in even additional dialogue. Sometimes what people would call unnecessary dialogue. Because better to talk a little bit more, better to go ahead and comfort someone for some unfounded fears than to allow unnecessary thoughts to fester in the mind of the other. Yaakov Avinu is proactive in addressing the potential fears and anger and sadness and resentment of his son Yosef in order that the family should be b'shalom. That's first approach. Take a look at number 6. So here, Rav Schwab, in his Mayam Beis HaShoeva, says something radically different. And this is quite beautiful. Rav Schwab writes, he quotes over here the Pasuk, and then he quotes again in paragraph B of Berashi. If you skip down a little bit, skip down in paragraph B, 2, 4, 6 lines in. Amnam, right after the period. Amnam, yikshehem shechaksuvim, sheimkein mekomu la'el, kishayishbiyu ala kvura be'eretz kinan, velo kan achar amro, Ephraim v'mash kruvim shemayili. So again, Rav Schwab quotes Rashi. Rashi explains that Yaakov Avinu feels the need to speak about what happened with Rachel, because perhaps Yosef is going to be resentful that he's being asked to transport his father's body to Maras HaMachpelah for burial, when Yaakov did not do the same for Rachel. So Rav Schwab asked the question that we just asked before, which is, if that's true, then this statement should have been recorded earlier, the last chapter, after Yaakov asked Yosef to bury him in Canaan. Why is it recorded here? And Rav Schwab says something amazing. Look at paragraph C. Venira. Sheramas lo Yaakov inyon Mashiach ben Yosef. It's amazing. So he says Yaakov Avinu was hinting, and by the way, this goes very well with another theme of Bishkesh Yaakov, the Galos Hasakeitz. Yaakov Avinu wanted to tell his children when messianic redemption would occur. But for whatever reason, that knowledge was hidden from him at the time that he was talking to his children. But he did reveal certain details. So what's going on over here? We know that there are two messiahs. Mashiach ben Yosef, Yofia Mikodem, Ve'yaharig b'milchama, Va'achakach Yavo Mashiach Meshevet Yehuda. So we know again there's Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David. We actually spoke about this on Shavuos Night Shir a couple of years ago. We spent the whole night on Mashiach. Mashiach ben Yosef dies in the war of Gog and Magog, dies in this ultimate war, this showdown between good and evil. And then Mashiach ben David, when we call Sviat HaMelech HaMashiach, we refer to Mashiach, the Davidic Mashiach, will come afterwards. Skip the parentheses. U'Mashiach ben Yosef, Yeh Meshevet Ephraim. V'hainu kidichsiv, V'Ephraim b'chorihu, HaBen Yakel Yephraim. And again, it's not just Mashiach ben Yosef. Mashiach ben Yosef comes from Ephraim, because again, remember, Ephraim is the Bechor. Now, Ephraim is not the biological Bechor. Remember, Menashe is the biological Bechor, the biological firstborn. But Ephraim was the more was to become the more prominent son. So Mashiach ben Yosef comes from Ephraim. Paragraph D. Va'acher shodia Yaakov liYosef. So after Yaakov Avinu told Yosef that Ephraim is going to become greater than his biologically older brother, he's going to become essentially the Bechor. Ramazlo, skip the brackets. Ramazlo, Shamashiach she'asid la'amod ibnei racham, mishevet Ephraim, shenechshav ka'bechor, yavo kodem Mashiach ben David beis halachmi. Yaakov Avinu alluded, hinted to the idea that Mashiach ben Yosef will come before Mashiach ben David, Beis Halachmi. Remember, Beis Halachmi, the Davidic family, was from Beis Lechem. Boaz is from Beis Lechem. Va'amar, listen to what Roshab says. Va'amar, va'ani bevoimi padan, mesa alai rocha ba'od kivras eretz lavo. So what Yaakov Avinu is saying, when I came from Padan, Rachel Aminu died, still far away from habitation. Ve'ekbera sham baderech Efrat, he Beis Lechem, and I buried her there on the road to Ephrat. That is Beis Lechem. So says Rashi, what does this mean? Shenikbara Rachel al derech al pi adibor lios li Ezra libaneha. Rachel Imenu was commanded. God commanded Yaakov to bury her on the road in order that she should be an advocate for her child. Children, how will she be an advocate? Al yedei Hamashiach sheyadmod mitzat zaeha kodem boam leBeis Lechem. So says Rashi something so amazing, that this pasuk is a scriptural allusion to the two messiahs. The first messiah ultimately is going to come from the road, from the one who is buried on the road to Beis Lechem. Mokom Yishai Avi David Mashiach Hashem, Ubazeh Pies Yaakov Avinu Es Yosef. So it's such an amazing insight. So Schwab writes that what happens? Yaakov Avinu says, I buried Rachel by the road. And why is she buried by the road? Like Rashi pointed out, she's going to be an advocate for her children as they're being led out to exile. But she's even a greater advocate. Why? Because one of her descendants is going to be the first of the two messiahs, the first of the Mashiachs, ultimately who's going to lead us in the war of Gog u'Magog. But what's going to happen? Ve'ekbera shabederech Efrat, he Beis Lechem. That Mashiach ben Yosef, will die when? On the way to Beis Lechem. On the way to Beis Lechem is a reference to what? Beis Lechem is a reference to the Davidic family. That Mashiach will die before getting to Beis Lechem, i.e. before Mashiach ben David will have an opportunity to rise up. So again, Rav Schwab points out over here something so incredibly amazing, that Yaakov Avinu is hinting to, again, the future Mashiach ben Yosef that is going to come from Rachel Imenu. Now, why is this important? And the truth is, this lesson also fits in well with what Rashi said as well, that what Yaakov Avinu was trying to teach his son was that sometimes in life there are certain things that seem incomprehensible now, and they're only made clear as history, as time continues to unfold. So right now, Yosef, it might look coarse, it might look callous, it might look unloving or unfeeling that I buried your mother in the middle of nowhere. But you will see that at the end of the day, that act that you might interpret as a lack of love for your mother is the greatest love for your mother. Because every mother wants to know that what? That she always is close to her children. Every mother wants to know that when her children are in need, she will be there for them. And Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef, I know you don't understand what I did, but as time goes on, as history unfolds, you will understand why she is buried in the middle of nowhere. She'll be the advocate for her children as they're led out into exile. She'll cry for them, and it will be her cries that will force the divine hand to convey mercy upon her children. And it is from her that ultimately, again, the first Mashiach will come. That Mashiach will help pave the way to Beis Lechem. So even her geographic area where she's buried is metaphorically significant. She's buried on the way to Beis Lechem because ultimately her descendant Mashiach ben Yosef will pave the way for Mashiach ben David, who originates in Beis Lechem. So lesson number two is that sometimes there are things that appear incomprehensible. There are things that appear exceptionally difficult and hard to comprehend now. But sometimes with the passage of time, sometimes as more time elapses, ultimately, again, we are blessed with greater clarity. Sometimes in life, you just have to sit tight until things begin to make sense and until things begin to coalesce. Which now brings us to our last approach. Number seven, a beautiful medrash. So the medrash pretty much sounds the same as everything we've learned until now, but let's take a look at it. Va'ani
Bivoimi padan mesalai racha. Ma inyan ze ha pasak eitzel ze. Elat safa Yaakov avinu shedato shal Yosef lishal aracha limo. Mipnei ma lo he'ela Yaakov avinu lekovru machpela. So the Medrash writes, Yaakov avinu saw prophetically that Yosef was bothered. He was bothered. Why didn't my mother deserve to be buried in Maras HaMachpela? Oil. V'chaviva ha'isalav. You loved her so much. You say you loved her so much. Why didn't you bury Maras HaMachpela? V'achlo hischil Yosef lishal. Before Yosef even had a chance to ask the question, hischil Yaakov lomar v'ani. Kilomar. V'ani ha'isi rotze lomar l'cho al imcha. So if Medrash says that Yaakov Avinu, before Yosef could even ask, Yaakov Avinu pulls Yosef aside and says, let me tell you a little bit about your mother. Let me tell you a little bit about what happened. Ki bevoi mi padan meisalai Rachel, alai haisa etzvona, lefi she'en ha'isha meisa el labayla. This is like what the Sfarno said before. When your mother died, again, meisa alai Rachel, she was dead to me most. Why? Because ultimately, again, who feels the loss of a person most acutely? A spouse. When a wife dies, her loss is felt most acutely by her husband. When a husband dies, the loss is felt most acutely by the wife. I said, maybe you'll ask, why didn't you bury your father? Why didn't you bury Masa Machpelah? Be'eretz Kinan Mesa. She died in Eretz Yisrael. Ukiila b'ma'ara nikbara. And Eretz Yisrael, all of it has Kiddusha. And therefore, wherever she's buried, it says, if she's buried, Masa Machpelah. Okay. V'lama lo yisa od l'sham. Ki b'derech meisa ba'od kivras aras levra afrasa. Ki haya ha'kayitz godol. V'avak ha'derech ha'isa yocha l'kovra b'kavra. L'fichach ekbara sham b'derech afrat hi beis lachem. Im of fine. So therefore, he says, therefore, it was a summertime. It was hot. There's dust storms. There's sand. All these things could have compromised her body. And therefore, again, we chose to bury her right where she died. Listen to what Medrash says. Furthermore, there's another reason we went ahead and we placed her by the road, so that when her sons come back to Eretz Yisrael, when the children come back, they will stand by her grave, and what? They will remember her. Now, remember, this is different than what we said before. Rashi also quotes a Medrash, but a different Medrash. According to the Medrash that Rashi quoted, why is Rachel Imenu buried by the side of the road? Why? For her to daven for her children. Because the children are going to be led out to exile, passing down this road. She is there to be an advocate. According to this version of the Medrash, Rachel Imenu is not buried there for her to come out to daven for her children, but rather, this is the pathway in which we will return to Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, again, having Rachel Imenu there allows us to stop at her kever, v'zochrin osa, and we remember her. And what does that mean, we remember her? So there's an amazing, amazing, amazing refresh. Number 8. Refresh, I'm just going to tell you, this forever is going to, if you like the way you understand this parasha, you could leave. But if this is forever going to change your understanding of this section, look what Rav Hirsch writes. Meisa alai. It was a fatal disaster that befell me. Remember, what Rav Hirsch is picking up on is the same word that the Medrash says. Yaakov Avinu could have just said, Meisa, she died. Meisa alai means literally what? Literally what? She died on me, which means her death is forever on me. There's not a day that goes by that I don't feel her death. Kivras, fine. The speech of Jacob, listen to this. Paragraph A. The speech of Jacob, referring back to Rachel's death and burial, is usually taken as having been said as exoneration for his placing such weight on his being buried in Machpelah, although Joseph's mother was not buried there. So Rav Hirsch says, like Rashi, that generally most understand that what this is all about is what? Is that Yaakov Avinu is trying to exonerate himself. Even though I did not bury your mother in Maras HaMachpelah, and I'm asking to bury Maras HaMachpelah, I'm going to explain to you why. But says Rav Hirsch, it can't be. But if that was its meaning, like we said before, we should have expected it to have been said above in the previous conversation, where Jacob asked for the promise for his burial, in connection in which we find it here, it could only have reference to the matter of the discourse here, the decision about the sons of Joseph. Now, what Rav Hirsch points out is, as we said before, if this is really about burial, if this is really about Yaakov Avinu feeling that Yosef is going to have animosity Because his father is asking him to do something that his father did not do for his own mother, for Rachel. Then this statement about Rachel should have been placed earlier on, right after the ask to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. But instead, it's nestled over here in the section that discusses Ephraim and Menasheh. So Rav Hirsch goes on. He says, in this conversation until the moment when he gives his blessing and imparts to his grandsons their position in the future of the nation, Jacob is designated solely as Jacob and not as Israel. When Joseph came to him, Vayischazek Yisrael, Jacob pulled himself together so as to regard Joseph not only as his son, but in his importance for the national future, which is associated with the name Yisrael. And from this standpoint, too, he expresses, verse 8, his blessing on Joseph's sons. Listen to this. So what Rav Hirsch is pointing out is something quite amazing. That when Yaakov Avinu, remember, Yaakov is the only one whose name was changed, but yet, again, still vacillates between both names, right? Once Avram becomes Avraham, it does not change back. Sarai becomes Sarah, does not change back. But yet Yaakov, when he's changed to Yisrael, still sometimes is known as Yaakov. Why? Why does the Torah sometimes use Yaakov? Why sometimes use Yisrael? Whenever we're speaking about a matter that has national ramifications and importance, we use the name Yisrael. Whenever we're discussing something about Yaakov as an individual, the Torah uses the name Yaakov. Now, Rav Hirsch makes an amazing observation. Rav Hirsch writes, and again, you can look back in number one for just a moment, but if you look back in number one, what happens? If you look right before Yaakov blesses Yosef and makes Menasheh and Ephraim like the tribes, Ephraim and Menasheh like the tribes, the Torah says, Vayomer Yaakov al Yosef. Now, one would have thought that in the moment when Yaakov Avinu is making Ephraim and Menasheh into tribes of Israel, which name would it have used? Yisrael. Because this is a matter of national importance. But yet, the Torah doesn't do that. The Torah uses the name Yaakov, individual. Why? What's the pshat? So Rav Hirsch writes, he says, paragraph C, for it seems that this favoritism to the sons of Joseph came not from national considerations, but from the individual personal feelings which Jacob, as Jacob the man, personally felt. So this is very dramatic. So Rav Hirsch says, unlike what we said before, like the Sfarno says to Yaakov Avinu, Yaakov says to Yosef, I was supposed to have more children. Lehem, these children were supposed to be mine. I was supposed to have more tribes. I couldn't. I'm living vicariously through you. Your children become the very actualization of my destiny. Rav Hirsch says, no, this is not about destiny. Because if it was about destiny, Torah would have used the name Yisrael. What is this about? This is something personal for Yaakov. Yaakov Avinu is saying, as an individual, as a Yaakov, I am taking Ephraim and Menasheh and placing them as part of the tribes of Israel. What does this mean? In the last days of his life, listen to how beautiful this is. I should say, it's heartbreaking. In the last days of his life, thoughts of the wife whom he loved most deeply, who was the actual wife of his choice, and who had been taken away from him the earliest, were specifically prominent in his mind. So Rav Hirsch says something amazing. What is Yaakov Avinu thinking about in his final days? You know what he's thinking about? It's common for people to reflect on their life. So what is Yaakov Avinu reflecting? What is he reflecting about? Who is he reflecting about? His beloved Rachel. He's thinking, and remember again, Rachel Imenu died years ago. But in his final moments in this earth, he has Rachel Imenu on his mind. Here's what he's concerned about. Her whole fate made it likely that her memory would be more in the background in the future memorials of the nation. When the children of Israel in latter times visited the graves of their ancestors, Maras Machpelah, they would find Avram and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, Yaakov and Leah. But Rachel, Yosef's mother, was not granted, even in death, to receive her place in the common resting place of the ancestors of the nation. And only two tribes call her their mother. To what the first writes, paragraph E. So it would be just the wife of his heart, whom he had thought of as the real mother of his future people, who might vanish from the hearts of the nation. What is Yaakov Avinu concerned about on his deathbed? That his descendants are going to forget about Rachel. That we're going to forget about Rachel Imenu. She died young. She was taken while the family was still developing. She's not buried with anyone else. She's only the mother of two of the 10 tribes. She's a minority stakeholder in the tribes. And so inevitably, what's going to happen over time is she's going to be forgotten. And for Yaakov Avinu in his final days, this causes him incredible pain. I've had pain my entire life over her loss. And the notion that now when I die, she may be forgotten as well is simply too much for me to handle. So what does he do? Paragraph E. That was why it was the deep desire of his heart to raise Joseph, Rachel's firstborn, Rachel's firstborn, to be the firstborn of his national tribes by making his sons into the two tribes to grant him the right to the firstborn to a double portion. So first, there's something absolutely amazing. Why is Yosef made the Bechor? Why is Yosef ultimately again? Why is he given the Pishon? Why is he given the double portion of Ephraim and Asher? One simple reason that it is to perpetuate the memory of beloved Rachel. To perpetuate the memory of his beloved wife Rachel Aminu. By making Yosef the Bechor, by making Yosef the firstborn, by now at least giving them, really going from two tribes to effectively three tribes, Yaakov Avinu feels that he ensures the continuity of Rachel Imenu's memory. What's the lesson for us? So the lesson for us is, you know, I spoke about this a little bit in this morning shiur, this morning in the witch shiur we spoke about Asara Beteves. And one of the important dynamics of Asara Beteves, in addition to all the reasons that we fast, but, you know, the chief rabbinate of Israel, over five decades ago, established Asara Beteves as the day for commemoration for victims of the Holocaust. That for those individuals who do not have a defined yahrzeit, for those individuals for whom the date of death is unknown, Asara Beteves is the day that is observed as the yahrzeit for those individuals. Why? Because we can never forget upon whose shoulders we stand. As a people, it is so exceptionally important. That's why you ever wonder, we have so many mitzvos that govern how we treat the elderly. Specifically, again, it was stated once in the Torah, but again, we say, Mipnei seva takum vahadarta pnei zakein. Right? I have to go ahead, I have Mipnei seva takum, I have to stand up in front of the older person, vahadarta pnei zakein, and to go ahead and give honor to the elderly. Now, by the way, what's the definition of an elderly person? Does it refer to a Talmud Chacham? Does it refer to a Torah scholar? Does it refer to someone who's more observant, less observant? And the answer is, it applies to, it's a biological statement. If a person is old, I owe them kavod. Why? Because as a people, we realize that we are only here today because of the sacrifices of those who came before us. We have the privileges, we have the opportunities we have today because of those throughout the generations who have given their lives of Kiddush Hashem, who have lived lives of Kiddush Hashem. So Yaakov Avinu has an existential concern that if I die, Rachel's buried in the middle of nowhere, she only has two sons. And the truth is, remember, we don't even know what's going to be with Yosef. As time, is Yosef going to stay in Egypt? Is he going to rejoin? What's going to happen? So Yaakov Avinu is so concerned that people are going to forget that, see, from Yaakov Avinu's perspective, Rachel Imenu, she was the true matriarch. Because she was the matriarch who I was supposed to marry. She was the woman who I chose. She was the one with whom I wanted to build a nation. Does he love Leah Imenu? Yeah, he loved Leah Imenu. But again, there's one inescapable fact, which is what? He never wanted to marry her. He never signed up for a life with Leah Imenu. She's a very nice woman, a very nice person. But Yaakov Avinu never consented to building a life with her. In Yaakov Avinu's eyes, Rachel Imenu was the one, ultimately again, who represents Klal Yisrael. It was Rachel Imenu's Mesiras Nefesh. Remember, the famous act of Mesiras, the famous act of self-sacrifice of giving her sister the signs that built Klal Yisrael. Without that act of Mesiras Nefesh, without that act of Rachel Imenu's self-sacrifice, who knows if there would have been a Shiftekah? Who knows if there would have been 12 tribes? The entirety of Klal Yisrael comes from the selflessness of Rachel Imenu. And Yaakov Avinu is scared that people are going to forget that she's going to simply disappear into the sands of time because she died young, she died before everyone else, she's not buried with anyone else. And therefore, V'ata, Shnei Banecha Noladim Lecha, Yosef, your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, Lihem. This is not Yisrael talking. This is not a matter of national importance. This is Yaakov. This is a heartbroken husband. This is a heartbroken father doing whatever he can in his last moments to ensure eternality to his wife's memory. And the lesson that it teaches us, that we must always be ever cognizant and ever aware of the sacrifices of those who came before us,
because it is only a result of their sacrifices that we are here today. So if we bring this all together, from one simple pasuk, from one simple phrase, we emerge again with so many beautiful and meaningful lessons. So remember again, from one simple idea that Yaakov Avinu tells Yosef, that explaining the circumstances of Rachel Imenu's death, so we learn again three basic lessons. Number one, it is exceptionally important to do whatever you can to try to clear up any type of misconceptions that may exist within relationships. It happens so often that in relationships, again, people walk around with misunderstandings, misconceptions, like we already saw in last week's parasha. And to Yaakov Avinu's credit, he teaches us the art of proactively addressing misconceptions, of proactively saying, I know you might be hurt, I know you might be upset, I know you might be thinking this. Sometimes, you know, we know that somebody is hurt or upset, but the truth is we say to ourselves, you know what, as long as they don't articulate it, I'm just going to pretend like it doesn't exist. I'm going to pretend like everything's fine, even though I know that not everything is fine. And you know what happens when you ignore things like that? Ultimately, again, the person will have that emotional explosion at some point in time. Better to be proactive. I think you might be in pain. I think you might be experiencing difficulty. Perhaps you're upset about something that I did. Let me be proactive in trying to mend the relationship even before it suffers any kind of trauma. Lesson number two. It's important to understand that there are certain things that perhaps in our present don't make sense. But we have to be humble enough to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a plan. And even those things that perhaps are now incomprehensible, sometimes with the simple passage of time and the evolution of events, so certain things that seem incomprehensible now find their meaning and find their place later on. And lesson number three, we must always remember that we stand on the shoulders of those who come before us. We must always remember that our lives, we are here, we're able to do the things that we do only because of the sacrifices of those who came before us. We're here, yes, as a nation because of the selflessness of Rachel Imenu and the thousands and thousands of Rachel Imenus ever since and the thousands of thousands of Yaakov Avinus ever since. And this is supposed to engender within us a certain element of Hakaras HaTov, a certain element of gratitude. Gratitude towards the sacrifices that previous generations have made, and gratitude for the opportunities that they have allowed us to experience. All right, we'll stop over here. And Mir Tashem, next week we pick up with Parsha Shmos. Okay, there's Marav in the base medrash now, whoever needs.